Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Of the sixth wave of our Marketplace Edison Research National Economic Poll this week, lots of good stuff in there about how our workforce is changing, what people are really worried about economically. And today, a subject we've included in that survey for the first time, sexual harassment in the workplace. More than 25% of the women we polled say they have experienced sexual harassment at work, and an even greater proportion told us they had left a job or switched careers entirely as a result of harassment. Marketplace's Erica Barris reports from WESA in Pittsburgh.
When Nilufer Merchant started her career in tech, it was the late 80s, and Silicon Valley was even more male-dominated than it is now. Merchant says sexual harassment was a constant at the high-profile companies where she worked, so she changed jobs a lot.
And so it meant I didn't get to build up the momentum that essentially a guy would be able to build up because they weren't facing the same obstacles.
Merchant went on to become a successful consultant, author, and speaker on workplace culture. Still, she wonders how things might have been different had she not felt the need to move around so much.
My career has been shaped by most, more than any other factor, is the level of sexual harassment I faced.
Nearly half the women we polled said, like Merchant, they had changed jobs as a result of harassment. Heather McLaughlin is a sociologist who studied the economic effects of sexual harassment on working women. She found that the majority who said they'd experienced it on the job left their companies within 2 years. That's higher than average.
Many also suffered career stagnation, so their earnings really plateaued when compared to women who continued on in those same career paths.
Even complaining can be costly. Women who do can end up without references and scrambling for income between jobs. And speaking up can be even harder for women who are paid less, says Maya Raghu with the National Women's Law Center.
Women are the majority of workers in low-wage jobs, and many of those women are also women of color or immigrant women.
Raghu is the center's director of workplace equity and also works with the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund.
And when you are in a low-wage job, it's much more difficult for you to take that risk to speak up and challenge sexual harassment.
Our poll found that roughly 30% of women felt that harassment was something they could report without fear, a figure that echoes findings by the Federal Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Leanne Meyer with Carnegie Mellon's Business School says women who switch jobs tend to move into industries where there are more women.
The more gender balanced an environment is, the more physically safe women are. So they're absolutely safer.
But safety is becoming a bigger concern for many companies. Elizabeth Bill is a lawyer with the Society for Human Resource Management. She says as a result of all the recent attention paid to sexual harassment.
So organizations are very interested in not only addressing legal sexual harassment or sexual harassment that violates the law, but also those precursor behaviors or those behaviors that cause discomfort or concerns in the workplace.
Bill's organization represents nearly 300,000 HR professionals at thousands of companies. Bill says a third of those companies have increased sexual harassment training and awareness, and another big chunk plans to do so. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
We put the data, should you be curious, from our Marketplace Edison Research poll online. It lives at marketplace.org. This final note on the way out today, which is not, repeat, not an endorsement. I saw this in the British paper The Telegraph, a study out of Wilfrid Laurier University in Canada showing, and let me say again here, this is not an endorsement, especially if my bosses are listening. Anyway, actual academic research showing that taking out one's workplace frustrations on a voodoo doll of one's boss can help lower workplace stress. Here is the actual quote from the researcher. As weird as it sounds, she said, A simple and harmless symbolic act of retaliation can make people feel like they are getting even and restoring their sense of fairness, end quote. Again, not an endorsement.
Marketplace is supported by Carbonite, offering data protection solutions for businesses, including automatic backup for servers, endpoint protection, high availability and disaster recovery, and data migration. Learn more at Carbonite.com. And by TIAA. With investing, advice, banking, and retirement services, TIAA can help customers achieve financial well-being. Go to TIAA.org.
Okay, we got to go. Dow Industrial's up 440 points today, 1.7%. NASDAQ up 132. That is 1.7%. S&P 500 up 1.7%. That works out to 47 points on that particular index. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Our executive editor is Evelyn LaRubia. Deborah Clark is the senior vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Have yourselves a great weekend, everybody. All right? This is APM.
All of us at Aspen Public Radio would like to say a great big thank you to all the listeners who gave a gift during our Many Voices One Valley Pledge Drive. Aspen Public Radio exists because of listeners like you who value it enough to voluntarily give us the money we need to stay on the radio. Because of your generosity, we're able to continue to deliver the quality, fact-based journalism and information that you value. If you didn't get around to giving during the drive, you still can. Contribute online at aspenpublicradio.org or give us a call at 920-9000. Thanks so much for your support.
Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. Not to confuse you, it's not the end of the show, but that's just the wrong music, and that's what happens when we're live. Thanks so much for tuning in. This week, it's already election season, and Mid-Valley communities are prepping to select their town representatives. Snowmass Village is prepping for summer, and issues of arts and business are one and the same in the Roaring Fork Valley. All that and more coming up on Valley Roundup. Joining me today to put all this in context and give their insights are John Fahey of the Aspen Daily News. Hi, John.
Hello.
Erica Robbie, editor of the Snowmass Sun. Hi, Erica.
Hi, Allison.
And Erica is sick, but joining us anyway, and we are very grateful for that. Thank you, Erica. And Kristen Kay, the new Edless Neeson Arts and Culture reporter here at Aspen Public Radio. Hi, Kristen.
Hi, Allison.
Thank you all for being with me. Let's start with some news of the week that you all brought to our listeners and readers. Let's start with Crown Mountain Park. John, the park itself is its own district. It's allowed to tax and ask people for money.
Well, it's larger than the park. It has its own special district that runs from, I think, Old Snowmass down toward Garfield County line or something like that. It's pretty big, but yeah, they're going to have a mill levy election in May.
Okay,
to count the votes.
They say the park is a positive asset to the community, but without more money, that can't stay. What do they mean when they say it's a positive asset? How does it help the community?
I talked to a fair number of people in Basalt.
Okay.
And in Willits especially, about the positive effect, economic effect.
Oh.
They have a bunch of events at the park. This lacrosse tournament brings 7,000 lacrosse people.
Crazy.
Which, yeah, I've never been around 7,000 lacrosse people. I'm sure they're all very, very pleasant. But those people, I mean, the lady who manages Whole Foods said it's their biggest week besides Christmas week.
Oh, wow.
Because of the park, all these events happen. People come, they spend their money. It's not just people who live in the Mid-Valley going to the park, but people come from other places. And their original financing structure was based upon property tax that apparently is, for some arcane state regulation reason, is actually going down.
Okay.
So they need to go hat in hand to the electorate. And there's already starting to be a little bit of Facebook pushback on, well, I don't use that park, why should I, da, 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 you know, that kind of stuff. So I think that they are probably they have a task in front of them to convince the voters.
Certainly. So you're saying the district is larger than the park. Of course, it's all the people who live around the park, Blue Lake, Willits, Basalt, some Elgibel, Carbondale maybe. Mm-hmm. But so those people would be paying, but maybe it's more out-of-town users who are actually getting the benefit.
There's I mean, I know plenty of people who go there,
okay,
who don't live in the Crown Mountain Special District. So, I mean, anytime you go to the voters and say, give us more money, even though when you do the stats, it's like $14 a year on a per $100,000. I mean, it seems inexpensive. But, you know, you combine that with RAFTA is going to be asking for another increase. You combine that with the proposed Regional Housing Authority. They'll be coming if they officially organize.
Great.
I guess it adds up to several pizzas and several beers a year. So.
I thought you did a good job of explaining, though, the original formation of the district, they had to take out a bond to get all the money to make that happen. But that'll be paid off soon enough. And that's reflected in this measure that, yes, maybe $70 extra for your $500,000 home per year, but just for 4 years.
Yeah, well, I mean, what they're asking for is a perpetual funding source.
Okay.
But the bond will be paid off in a couple of years, so the taxpayer obligation to that will be eliminated. So in a few years it'll be a wash.
Okay.
And I can't imagine. I mean, I use Crown Mountain Park every day.
Do you?
I live right across the street from
okay.
it. Okay. So, and I don't own property here, so I don't pay anything on that. But I do pick up extra dog poop there. So I think
okay,
I pay
that's
my
a
pay
fee for sure.
They go through 100,000 dog poop bags a year. So it's.
I want to know a little bit, and Kristen, maybe you and your munch can take walks over there too. But who mm-hmm. who is what's the demographic of the people who are using this park?
Well, I've never been here in the summertime,
okay.
so I don't know the lacrosse people and all that kind of stuff. But if you go there on any day, it's dog walkers. It's a leashless dog park with a mile loop, and it covers the gamut. I'm mainly looking at the dogs, but covers the gamut from chihuahuas to Rottweilers.
Yes. We have a new Instagram, like Dogs of Crown Mountain Park,
right.
Please.
I really think it's everyone. I mean, you do see in the summer, it's always, there's soccer practice and lacrosse practice and adults just out in the fields, you know, playing soccer for fun on Friday nights, and it's families and, you know, older people out for walks, so it is really an amenity.
And that's not what was anticipated. The issue is we thought we were just going to do snow removal and mowing the grass, and now someone better be there for if they're booking for a tournament, if there's an event, someone has to do the pop-up tent, someone mm-hmm. has to make sure people are paying their dues, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and they have to maintain the ball fields, they have to line the fields, they have to do all that stuff. I mean, it's sort of like a facility that most towns in America have where the kids go play Little League and go play soccer. I mean, it's not just people like me walking their dogs.
Okay.
So it's, I mean, it is an amenity, but, you know, there are probably more people in the district who don't use the park than who do. So, I mean, you can say that with any facility. It's
right.
The population of the district, I think they told me was 7,000 something. And, you know, that's hard to quantify. But I don't think they're going to have an uphill battle to
okay.
get this, but they're going to have to on their A game to get it passed.
It's a mail-in ballot starting end of April. Is it just straight majority wins?
As far as I know.
Okay.
I think I remember it was 2011 when a Mid-Valley Rec Center was voted down.
Okay.
And one of the reasons for the pushback was, look at where we are. You can get outside and exercise. So we'll see. I think that's really interesting now. We'll see if that is still supported because that's a place where you can get outside and be active.
And that's fascinating. The same people who said, hey, we have this park amenity now don't
mm-hmm.
want to throw in
right.
for the park. So we'll see what those Mid-Valley people do. They always have plenty to write about, John. Let's switch up a little bit to Snowmass Village. Erica, you had a story talking about some of the events that will be happening or not happening in Snowmass this summer. Of course, a wonderful time to be in Snowmass Village, mostly event-based. What are some of the debut events we'll see this year?
So, Allison, there are 4 new events this summer. Adventure Out, which is hosted by Aspen Out, the producers of Aspen Gay Ski Week. And a little different from Aspen Gay Ski Week, they're really trying to target a family market, you know, not so much focus on the parties and whatnot,
okay.
a lot of outdoor emphasis. And my understanding with that is that it's trying to attract a burgeoning LGBT travel market and also family, you know, with more gay marriage laws passing and families and kids, you know, it's kind of this whole market, I guess, that they're trying to really tap into. So That's over 4th of July weekend, too. So, yeah, there'll be a lot going on over there. And then
what's the Yeti tribe?
Yeti tribe. So that's the one I know the least about because Yeti is waiting on Forest Service finalization on the permits to have that up there. So we'll see what that is. But my understanding from the site, at least, is that it's a gathering of Yeti worshippers, devoters,
and
owners.
And I wish we were talking about the monster,
that these are bikes. These are bikes, not coolers. These are Yeti bikes, yes. which is, awesome for Snowmass, burgeoning bike scene. So I think that'll be really well received.
And they want to use some of that forest, designated forest land, so for trails or camping or something, and they need permission.
Exactly. Okay. And then I guess my understanding is that they have this event in several other locations in Colorado, Montrose, Telluride, just, similar, comparable mountain destinations. So that'll be cool. And then what else do we have? So Reed Lewis, the owner of Daily Bottle Shop, is going to host Snowmass Cider Festival.
Okay.
And his goal with that was to provide an event between the lull that is, the morning on that weekend is the Balloon Festival, and then in the evening it's... What is in the evening then?
Yeah, more like more a concert or...
Concert, yeah, Balloon Glow.
Okay.
I think it's the Wine Fest. I don't know. There's a lot going on that weekend, but there was a little afternoon lull, and he said he saw an opportunity there. And from his take, and he's been at, Daily Bottle for almost 20 years, he feels that tasting events do really well in Snowmass, whether it be beer festival, wine festival. So,
he should be getting...
Specifically ciders, 25 to 30. Yeah, okay. Exactly. So, great time. And then what is the last event we have coming?
Well, one thing that I saw was interesting in your article was what we're missing out.
Sure.
There was this huge push, like it was going to be so exciting that we were going to have this paid concert / art festival on Fannie Hill. And that was kind of a bust last year.
Totally. I've heard this, 100 times from Snowmass Tourism and whatnot, but I think they just have a really hard time asking people to pay for, I don't want to say more or less the same talent, but maybe a little better. I don't know. But
right.
That they can get for free on Thursdays. And I think also people over in Snowmass and the Valley in general really value those Thursday concerts. Mm-hmm. And they don't really want to see them on Saturday or Friday sometimes. I mean, that's just my take. And it was funny. There was a part-time residence board meeting last week. And Rose Abello, the director at Snowmass Tourism, said, and we have, I believe the number was 10, 10 Thursday concerts. I repeat, Thursday, making it clear that, the message has been received. We know
right.
You guys like your Thursday concerts. And who doesn't, honestly? I mean.
Wonderful. And do either one of you know the lineup of that will be released around when?
I know the whole summer lineup is out. I'm
oh,
not
great.
Sure
okay.
with the acts. What do you?
No, I can't remember any.
Yeah.
But they did release it.
They did release some lineup.
It is always so popular. I think people
yeah.
come,
oh, yeah.
From all over and vacationers go. And so
totally.
It's a lot of fun.
I think the Thursday formula just works too because, the weekends there's a million things going on. You're
mm-hmm.
in and you're out and there's just other opportunities. But to really be like, Thursday, this is what I do, and people just love it. So.
And I know it's ironic to say it, but the hall to Snowmass, and I'm air quoting here, the hall to Snowmass, mm-hmm. to fight
right.
that, like if I could do something right where I am in the Mid-Valley or up in Aspen or get my mm-hmm. butt to Snowmass, it's a little bit different. Kristen, another thing that's going to be unveiled to the public later this month mm-hmm. is the Carbondale Arts Around Town finalists, but you found out a little bit about what those are this week. What do you know?
So the Carbondale Public Arts Council is discussing, and right now they're in this process of reaching out to the artists who have already been selected. What I thought was really interesting is that these artists aren't necessarily like, yes, I'm in when they get that call, because transporting giant sculptures, actually the logistics can be really tough and they may not be able to make it. And then also... there are these marble bases from marble that are used specifically for these sculptures that will be placed around Carbondale. And so those logistics of figuring out whether these sculptures work with these specific bases that are like the tradition for art around town, that's also something that has to be figured out. So that's why they can't just announce, here's our 15 and why it's taking a while to kind of contact and work that stuff out.
Okay.
And then the opening where everyone will see the sculptures is later in May. So still a little bit of time.
Okay, great. Thank you. You are listening to Valley Roundup live on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bektesh. Joining me here in the studio to put the week's news in perspective for us today are John Fahey of the Aspen Daily News, Erica Robbie, editor of the Snowmass Sun, and Aspen Public Radio's arts reporter Kristen Kay. We'll be right back. Welcome back, and thanks for tuning in to Valley Roundup on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bektesh. John Fahey from the Aspen Daily News is watching the Basalt Town Council, as you do, and the elections that are coming up. What are we seeing right now? Who's up? What are the numbers of how many people will be voting for?
There are three open seats. One person who's an incumbent is not running again.
Okay.
Two people who are incumbents are running again. And then there are four other candidates. So there are three open seats, six people running. And in addition, there is the tobacco tax issue that's on the ballot.
That's right.
And there have been two candidate forums so far. And I went to one of them.
Was it well attended?
No, it was very poorly attended.
Oh, interesting.
I was sort of surprised. Like a friend of mine said, if you take away people who had like the grassroots team and the candidates and the candidate spouses, there were maybe 15, 18 people there.
That's so interesting to me because Basalt has, we've talked about on the show, the very engaged public, especially on contentious issues.
Well, it's by and large seems like a politically contentious town. I think when you get down into the grassroots level, like if you're at Crown Mountain Park or at one of the bars or something, maybe it's not quite as much so.
Okay.
But it's the candidate forum that I did attend at the library, it was, I mean, my day would have been made if there was name calling and vitriol and people throwing stuff at each other. But it was not like that at all. It was very polite.
Was there anything that set them most apart, that there was most disagreement on?
There was some disagreement on the Pan and Fork CDC parcel, which
shocking. I saw your mouth cringe as it was coming out.
If I never hear those words again the rest of my life, I mean, I wish somebody would put like a plutonium dump or something there just to end the controversy, something. But basically, it's the controversies are centered around should the town buy that parcel and then do whatever they want to do with it, or should they basically have a developer do what they want to do with it. And with the recent application by the Willits people, that has definitely derailed the town's discussions on the town buying the property. I'm convinced if I come back here in 75 years, they will still be talking. Mm-hmm. But that seemed to be the main issue. There were some other things, little differences on we should put more money into childcare, we should put more money into art, those kinds of things.
Interesting.
But the words, I agree with so-and-so, were uttered discouragingly frequently. I tried to amp it up a bit. They allowed the media to ask a couple of questions, and I asked if they would support having more medical marijuana licenses in downtown Basalt, and everybody went like, and I asked what they thought about maybe Willits seceding from Basalt, which is actually something I've heard quite a bit of.
Okay.
And there was just nothing but kumbaya.
Okay.
And the term one Basalt, and which is crazy. I mean, there's not one Basalt. I mean, there's Willits, there's Old Town, there's Southside, there's two counties. And anyway, I hope as Election Day gets closer, and we're moving on it fast,
That
people will start hurling invectives and calling each other names and stuff. So, I mean, I need some lively quotes.
Well, I know people are impatient about that property, and one of the things that I believe came up during one of the forums this week was potentially having an art nonprofit have some part in the Pan and Fork. And the art base, they're like, I've talked to people who are like, we're ready. We're ready to make that leap.
Okay.
And they're impatient for some things to happen. I don't know that they're totally holding their breath.
Well, I mean, the thing is, no proposal is going to come down the pipe that says, sorry, Art Base, you have to get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that would be tantamount to suicide.
Right.
So it's mm-hmm. so the Art Base is definitely part of every discussion that I've ever heard. And sometimes it's couched in a more general nonprofit component of the development. But I don't think the Art Base is going to go anywhere.
Kristen, I want to talk actually a little bit more about your beat. You're stepping into the arts reporter here at Aspen Public Radio. And as you just pointed out, I mean, arts beat can mean the politics beat. Arts beat can mean the economics beat. How are you addressing this?
You know, I think one little story this week is the Cocktail Classic. I think that's actually a good example. It's a fun event. Like, it's in its sixth annual year. However, this year they're going to venues all over Aspen. I mean, it really is a business story, maybe right. more than an entertainment story. And it's it's true. And actually, it makes me think about what we talked about with Crown Mountain Park. These things, the arts, recreation, these aren't necessarily seen as luxuries anymore. These are economic drivers, especially in Colorado and especially in our valley. They're also economic drivers for rural areas, which we are, even though we sometimes feel like a big city. And they bring jobs and they bring a lot of income. And I think that that's one thing that I want to keep in mind as I'm covering is, you know, what are the forces kind of at work in our world?
Fascinating. Let's talk a little bit about the Snowmass Town Council has put a third continuation on a discussion about the Snowmass Center. Erica, that's crazy.
Yeah, this has been going on since early February, and they are going to continue with a site visit on March 19th. So we had early February, early March, and yeah, it's...
So let's say a little bit. We know the Snowmass Center right now is the post office and a small Clark's Market.
Yep, Clark's, and there's Sundance Liquor, and it's kind of, they all, you know, dub it the locals serving area. It's not so much tourist driven. It's really like your essential services.
Okay. And so the idea is let's keep all of those, but let's make a bigger, fancier building?
More or less. And they also really want to, in addition to expanding it, kind of transform it into a communal hub and add a Main Street level to it so that it does feel more like, you know, two-sided and people can sit outside at restaurants and eat and make it more of like a gathering space, which is something that Snowmass often refers to as well. You know, we need more community gathering spots and sites. So that's my understanding of the goal with this project. And yeah, it will be larger for sure, which of course, you know, always gets people's ears.
And but that's what's holding it up. That's why the council keeps wanting to talk about it.
Definitely. Yeah. They scaled the developers, Eastwood Snowmass Investors, they scaled it back. Originally it was proposed at 20,000 square foot commercial increase. And wow, now it's at 17. And certain buildings, you know, have gone from proposed to 62 feet to 44. You know, that was like the parcel near Clark's Market. Okay. They wanted to make that, you know, more than four stories. And the mayor had a funny line. She said, "I almost feel like I'm in Vail looking at the development," which of course is not
that
a compliment.
No,
exactly. So, they've definitely scaled it back.
Okay. So, but why would they even think that they can go bigger? I mean, if there's planning codes and laws saying like we no more than 32 feet or 38 feet.
I think 38 is the zoning.
Then what do they think they're offering that they're going to get away? Are they offering to do affordable housing or something where this would be, you know, they're breaking the code, but they're giving something back?
Sure. There is affordable housing to it, and I believe that it exceeds what is required. That's my understanding. And then there also is free market residential, which, I mean, you know, they're both needed. Obviously, the affordable one much more. And then my theory is they just go high and shoot low, you know, okay, classic negotiation. Like, we'll start here, and then they'll put us down, and we'll just keep coming back.
During these continuations, is it just the developers and the council that are talking? Are they taking public comment?
Well, Toni Kronberg, of course, is making her comments related to – she was at both public hearings, and she talked about connectivity, of course. She has the idea to connect with the gondola, the aerial connection, while the developers are looking at a bridge to connect from over to Base Village. And then there was another comment at the February meeting related to parking and congestion in that area with, you know, the additional – businesses and whatnot, but the developers seem to sort of ease that one.
Okay. So I saw a comment on your story, if you look online, it says, "Don't touch a good thing," or "Yeah, don't mess with a good
there's
thing."
There's a lot more. I've heard it and seen, you know, a lot more comments, just both hearsay and online, social media, of course, and most of those seem to relate to, you know, preserving the small town character and that sort of sentiment, so.
And the connectivity thing, it's because what we're talking about is basically as you come into the village, this is all over to your right at that new roundabout. Everything else that visitors and skiers and all, that they'll all be at the mall or at Base Village,
right,
and have to kind of cross this highway, Brush Creek,
exactly,
to get to this new area.
And the issue is, you know, some of the council members, Tom Good, I believe, being one, or their argument is, you know, people aren't going to want to walk across these bridges with groceries in the middle of winter or tourists coming from sea level. You know, they view it as not the most ideal scenario, or some of them, but then they also address, you know, downsides to an aerial connection as well.
It's hilarious to me that development in Snowmass Village includes, like, altitude sickness awareness.
100%.
That's amazing to me.
And then addressing, you know, the aging in population, given, you know, a lot of older folks over there, second homeowners and whatnot, so...
John, you were just seeing one of the gems of Snowmass Village. You were up at their club, at their fitness club. Can you tell me why you were there?
I was doing a story on Amanda Buxtel. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Crown Mountain Park, I see her there all the time.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She's in her wheelchair with her dog, and I had to help her through some thick slush one time last winter, and I finally asked somebody about her, and they told me the story. And I contacted her about the robotic exoskeleton that she's such a big part of, and I thought somebody was maybe making that up, so we hooked up. I went up there and took some photos and watched it in action, and it was definitely those rare kinds of stories where, like, hey, this is fun, this is interesting, but it was a good story. And then I went to their fundraiser at the Tesla store the next night.
Oh, okay.
And but yeah, that was great. I mean, the Snowman's Club, I was very impressed. As I said before we went on the air, they kind of looked down their nose at me when I walked in with mud on my hiking boots, and the service entrance is around back, sir. But what a facility! I mean, it was amazing, and watching the exoskeleton in action.
So, what
was
were you
astounding.
Expecting when you heard that there was kind of this futuristic walking machine that helps a man to stand up and actually walk? And then what was it like to experience that?
Well, what I was expecting was, I mean, I'm a big Star Trek fan, so I was expecting something. But I was expecting that the machine somehow just walked on its own. Like, if you didn't have a person in there, it would walk down the hall, and then the person just gets put in there and follows the thing. But I was surprised to learn that it has neuroreceptors in it, and so the machine reacts to the person.
To what they're thinking, like they use their brain like they would to say, hey, left leg move, like we do all unconsciously all the time.
I think it's more in their feet and their hands. And there are controls in the... They have like trekking poles, almost. So they're but there are sensory receptors in the feet, and so anyway, I thought it was, it was an amazing thing.
Right.
And the therapeutic benefits, of course, are I'm not an expert in that field, but apparently pretty pronounced.
Just moving your body in a different way
getting those nerves and muscles working again that haven't worked in years, but more than that, Amanda brought to my attention. I mean, I'm a hiker.
Okay.
I mean, I'm a enthusiastic upright biped, and somebody who's wheelchair bound, I mainly think about how sore must your butt be the whole time sitting in a wheelchair. I had never thought about the lack of being able to stand up and being what a human being is and being able to view the world from the level and in the way that humans do and have for hundreds of thousands of years, and that was something that I hadn't thought of, and it was a really interesting thing. But it's they do everything from quadriplegic to paraplegics, and just an amazing thing. I was stoked.
So empowering to be able to have that experience and stand up and feel like you think you're supposed to feel. And not only is her story alone fascinating, that she's been able to try out this equipment and that she has learned to use it, she knows it's such a benefit that she offers it to others now.
Yeah, her organization, I think they've had 61 clients.
Wow.
Over the
in
years.
The valley.
Yeah, they do it at the Snowmass Club, and then there's a place in Glenwood Springs that they go once a week. They have a portable one of these units too. And so I think they've had like 2,800 individual sessions, and they're expensive. I mean, this is an expensive. These machines cost $175,000. Mm-hmm. I mean,
makes sense they had it at the Tesla store then.
Yeah, well, I think that was not an accident. So anyway, great story. It was that's one good thing about the Colorado High Country. It has a million of those kinds of stories.
I think that's a great way to appreciate what we have going on here. One other story kind of on the other end is these young nonprofit, these young girls who are helping save the world, or at least some of the fauna of the world. The local schoolgirls who are bringing the cheetah group to Hallam Lake next week.
Oh, the Poachman twins. Yes, I met them the other night. I was sitting there thinking, what was John Fahey doing when he was 12?
Right.
I mean, it involved fire and rock throwing. It did not involve saving the world. That was a great story too. These young ladies who were raising money to help save elephants and cheetahs, and their dad is a member of the Board of County Commissioners here, Greg. Anyway, that was a fascinating story. I enjoyed working on that.
One of the quotes from one of the young girls was, "I've learned that kids really can make a difference in the world, but it takes a lot of effort to do so." Did you learn that in speaking to them?
Well, I mean, we didn't meet out in the field. We met at a restaurant. But they're doing bake sales and making greeting cards and going out of their way. It's not like sitting in front of Safeway selling Girl Scout cookies, which, you know, God bless the Girl Scouts selling Girl Scout cookies. But
thank goodness.
You know, they were actually making stuff and going out of their way to, you know, aggressively trying to raise funds for these causes. And it made me feel guilty about how slack I was when I was 12 and
well,
how slack I continue to be.
This is not the end of their career. They're both planning on becoming secret agents when they grow up.
Right, such a great last line. And studying big cats.
Right. You've been listening to Valley Roundup Live on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. Thanks so much to John Fahey of the Aspen Daily News, Erica Robbie, who came in sick, editor of the Snowmass Sun, and Kristen Kay, the new Edless Neeson Arts and Culture reporter here at Aspen Public Radio. Thank you all so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News. Thanks for listening.